Lothar de la Rey cut the spur of the elephant herd 3 days after they had left the Kuneni River, and he and his Ovambo trackers studied it carefully, spreading out and circling over the trodden earth like gun dogs. When they assembled again, Lothar nodded at his headman.
"Speak, Endrik."
The Ovambo was as tall as Lothar, but heavier in the shoulders. His skin was dark and smooth as molten chocolate.
"A good head," Hendrik gave his opinion. 40 cows, many with calf, 8 young bulls.
The dark turban of the warrior was wound around his proud head, and garlands of necklaces strung with trade beads hung down onto his muscular chest. But he wore riding breeches and a bandolier of ammunition over one shoulder.
"And the head bull is so old that his pads are smooth. So old that he can no longer chew his food, and his dung is coarse with bark and twigs. He walks heavily on his 4 legs. His ivory weighs him down. He is a bull to follow," Hendrik said, and shifted the Mauser rifle into his right hand and hefted it in anticipation.
"The spur is windblown," Lothar pointed out quietly, "and scratched over by insect and quail, 3 days old."
"They are feeding."
Hendrik opened his arms.
"Spread out, moving slowly. The calves slow them down."
"We will have to send the horses back," Lothar persisted. "We cannot risk them in the tsetse fly."
"Can we catch them on foot?"
Lothar unknotted his scarf and wiped his face thoughtfully. He needed that ivory. He had ridden north to the Kuneni as soon as his scouts had sent him word that good rains had fallen. He knew that the new growth and surface water would lure the herds across the river out of Portuguese territory.
"On foot we can make them in 2 days, Hendrik promised, but he was a notorious optimist, and Lothar teased him.
"And at each night's camp we will find 10 pretty herrero girls, each carrying a beer pot and a head waiting for us."
Hendrik threw back his head and laughed, his deep, growling laugh.
3 days, then," he conceded with a chuckle, "and perhaps only one herrero girl, but very beautiful and obliging."
Lothar pondered the chances a moment longer. It was a good bull, and the younger bulls would all carry mature ivory. Even the cows would yield 20 pounds each, and ivory was commanding 22 shillings and 6 pence a pound. He had 12 of his best men with him, though 2 would have to be sent back with the horses. But there were still enough riflemen to do the job. If they could come up with the herd, they had a good chance of killing every animal that showed ivory. Lothar de la Rey was flat broke. He had lost his family fortune. He had been declared a traitor and an outlaw for continuing the fight after the surrender of Colonel Frank, and there was a price on his head. Perhaps this would be his very last chance to repair his fortune. He knew the British well enough to realize that when the war was over, they would turn their attention to administering the new territories that they had won. Soon there would be district commissioners and officers in even the remotest areas, enforcing every detail of the law and paying special attention to the illegal hunting of ivory. The old freebooting days were probably numbered. This could be his last hunt.
"Send back the horses," he ordered. "Take the spur."
Lothar wore light hunting feldskun. His men were all tempered and hardened by long years of war, and they ran on the spur, taking it in turns to come to the front and take the point, then dropping back to rest as another man hit the front. They entered the fly belt in the late afternoon, and the vicious little tsetse swarmed out of the shade of the forest to plague them, settling light-footed on their backs to drive their blood-sucking proboscis deep into the flesh. The men cut switches of green leaves and brushed the tsetse off each other's backs as they ran. By nightfall they had gained 2 days on the herd, and the spur was so fresh that the antlions had not yet built their tiny funnel-shaped traps in the crisply trodden padmarks. Darkness stopped them. They lay on the hard earth and slept like a pack of hounds, but when the moon climbed over the tops of the mapani trees, Lothar kicked them to their feet. The slant of moonlight was in their favour, outlining the spur with a rim of shadow, and the raw trunks of the mapani trees from which the feeding elephant had stripped back shone like mirrors to guide them through the night, and when the sun rose, they lengthened their stride. An hour after sunrise, they suddenly ran out of the tsetse fly belt. The territory of these little winged killers was sharply demarcated. The border could be crossed in 100 paces, from swarming multitudes to complete relief. The swollen, itching lumps on the back of their necks were the only souvenirs of their onslaught. 2 hours before noon, they reached a good waterhole in one of the valleys of the Mapani forest. They were only hours behind the herd.
"Drink quickly," Lothar ordered,
and waded knee-deep into the filthy water which the bathing elephant had churned to the colour of café au lait. He filled his hat and poured the water over his own head. His thick red-gold locks streamed down over his face, and he snorted with pleasure. The water was acrid and bitter with the salt of the elephant urine. The great beasts always emptied their bladders at the shock of cold water, but the hunters drank and refilled the water bottles.
"Quickly!"
Lothar chivied them, keeping his voice low, for sound carried in the bush, and the herd was very close.
"Bass!"
Hendrik signalled him urgently, and Lothar waded to the edge of the pool and skirted it quickly.
"What is it?"
Wordlessly, the bigger Vumbo pointed at the ground. The spoor was perfectly imprinted in the stiff yellow clay, and it was so fresh that it overlaid that of the elephant herd. Water was still seeping into the indentations.
"Men!" Lothar exclaimed. "Men have been here since the herd left."
Hendrik corrected him harshly.
"Sen, not men, the little yellow cattle killers."
The Avumbo were herdsmen. Their cattle were their treasure and their deep love.
"The desert dogs who cut the teats of the udders of our finest cows. The traditional revenge of the San for the atrocities committed upon them. They are only minutes ahead of us. We could catch them within the hour."
"The sound of gunfire would carry to the herd."
Lothar shared his herdsman's hatred of the bushmen. They were dangerous vermin, cattle thieves and killers. His own great-uncle had been killed during one of the great bushman hunts of 50 years before. A tiny bone-tipped arrow had found the chink in his rawhide armour, and family history had recorded his death in every excruciating detail. Even the English, with their sickly sentimentality towards the black races, had realised that there was no place in the 20th-century world for the San. The standing orders of Cecil Rhodes' famous British South Africa police contained instructions that all San and wild dogs encountered on patrol were to be shot out of hand. The two species were considered as one. Lothar was tempted, torn between the pleasure of performing the public service of following and destroying the pack of San and of mending his own fortune by following the elephant.
"The ivory," he decided. "No, the ivory is more important than culling a few yellow baboons."
"Bass, here."
Hendrik had moved around the edge of the pool and stopped abruptly. His tone and the alert set of his head made Lothar hurry to him, and then sit quickly on his heels, the better to examine this new set of prints.
"Not San," Hendrik whispered. "Too big."
"But the woman,"
Lothar replied. The narrow foot and small shapely toe marks were unmistakable.
"A young woman."
The toe marks were deeper than the heel, a springy step.
"A young step."
"It is not possible."
Hendrik sank down beside him, and without touching the print, traced the arched portion between ball and heel. Lothar sat back and shook his wet, dangling locks again. The black people of Africa who go barefooted from their very first step have a distinctive, flat imprint.
"A wearer of shoes," Hendrik said softly.
"A white woman?"
"No,
it's impossible,"
Lothar repeated.
"Not here. Not travelling in the company of wild sand, for the love of God. We are hundreds of miles from civilization."
"It is so, a young white girl, a captive of the San,"
Hendrik confirmed, and Lothar frowned. The tradition of chivalry towards women of his own race was an integral part of Lothar's upbringing, one of the pillars of his Protestant religion. Because he was a soldier and hunter, because it was part of the art of his trade, Lothar could read the sign left upon the earth as though he were actually seeing the beast or the man or woman who had made it. Now, as he squatted over these dainty prints, an image formed in his mind.
He saw a girl, fine-boned, long-legged, gracefully proportioned, but strong and proud, with a raking stride that drove her forward on the balls of her feet. She would be brave also and determined. There was no place in this wilderness for weaklings, and clearly this girl was flourishing. As the image formed, Lothar became aware of an emptiness deep in his soul.
"We must go after this woman," he said softly, "to rescue her from the San."
Hendrik rolled his eyes towards the sky and reached for his snuff gourd and poured a little of the red powder into his pink palm.
"The wind is against us."
He waved one hand along the run of the spoor.
"They are travelling downwind. We will never come up with them."
"There are always 100 good reasons why we should not do what you don't want to do."
Lothar raked his wet hair back with his fingers and re-tied it with the leather thong at the nape of his neck.
"We will be following San, not animals. The wind is of no consequence."
"The San are animals."
Hendrik blocked one of his wide, flat nostrils with his thumb and sucked red snuff up the other before going on.
"With this wind they will smell you from 2 miles and hear you long before you sight them."
He dusted his hands and flicked the residual grains from his upper lip.
"A beautiful story," Lothar scoffed, "even for you, the greatest liar in all of Avamboland."
And then brusquely,
"Enough chatter. We are going after the white girl. Take the spoor."